Hi everybody, and welcome to the Last Word on Tennis podcast. I come to you still no ATP or WTA Tour tennis just yet, but we have had announcements that it's going to be back quite soon. So that's why I've brought together some of our brightest and best to talk about that issue that we're going to be having tennis again soon, and also a little bit of the bad side of tennis that's happened over the last few weeks with the Adria Tour and all that's been going on there as well. We'll pick it up by the end though by asking some positive questions about who might come back into the tennis world and hit the ground running. And speaking of playing really well, let's hope that these three wonderful people can play well together on this podcast. I'm going to introduce them by asking a question though. So I think we'll start with our debutante. We've got a new person on the Last Word on Tennis podcast today. Glenys, hi. I have a very interesting question for you. I want to know, what is something that you've done that you instantly regretted?
Something I've done that I've instantly regretted. I'm going to be really boring and say I haven't.
No regrets?
No.
So you shouldn't do. But I was wondering whether Novak Djokovic might have had a regret about what he's done with the Adria Tour. That's why the question has come up. Jack, have you done anything that you instantly regretted?
The list goes on and on. I don't know. The thing that came to mind, I have to say, it's pretty mundane, but just like there's certain foods I tried and I knew I wasn't going to like them. And then you try them and then you just think, why'd I do that? Like for me, the artichokes, why'd I do that? Like you can look at it, you know, it's probably not going to be your thing. At least I could.
Yeah, I have to say I'm not a fan of artichokes either. I have tried them, but not for me, not anymore.
I mean, you got to try stuff, but like exactly. Sometimes you just know and then you take the bite and you think, oh, come on.
That was one of yours. Jim, what have you done that you've instantly regretted?
I'm not sure about instantly regretted, but my dad convinced me to become a Tottenham Hotspur fan, and that has been a lifelong regret of mine. It's just a series of glorious failures, snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. So that's become a well-established regret as I watch other football fans enjoy success that I couldn't even dream of. It's so foreign a concept.
Yeah, even me as a Blackburn Rovers fan has had a little bit of success. Right, let's move on. There is going to be a quiz question for this podcast, for everybody at home as well, and for you guys. The question that I want you guys to try and answer for me is, I want the names of the people who have won consecutive US singles titles since 1980. Okay, so we're talking about men and women. There are, I'll give you a clue, there's 7 men and there's 6 women. So 13 people in total. You'll probably forget that I've asked you this question by the time I ask for the answers at the end. But you guys at home, if you've got a pad and paper, maybe start jotting down some people you think might have won consecutive US Open titles, because the US Open will form part of our discussion, but not before we've got to address the Adria Tour mess, first of all, I think. It was put together by Novak Djokovic and a few others with no shortage of fanfare and excitement, because they were bringing fans back into stadiums and promises were bring some exposure to some young tennis players and bringing tennis back to the former Yugoslavia. I'm not sure they expected the kind of exposure that they got, though. One by one, players started announcing that they'd announced positive for the coronavirus, tested positive for it. Grigor Dimitrov, I think, was the first, and then Borna Choric has said he was tested positive. Troitsky and Novak Djokovic himself, finally, when he got back home, he and his wife, Yelena, tested positive, and he put out a statement on that. That's kind of a very brief overview of what happened. Jim Smith, you've been kind of the main journalist across this for Last Word on Tennis. Maybe you could tell us a little bit more in depth, like your impressions of what's happened and where this leaves Novak Djokovic.
I mean, it's a public relations nightmare for Djokovic. I think the intention of what he was trying to do was good. It was good to see cross-border cooperation in the region. Obviously, he grew up at a time when that was very much not on the cards, so that was a real positive. But the carelessness is hard to understand in the time of a global pandemic. It's understandable that in their case, because the government of Serbia said that they could have fans, that the social distancing regulations were limited because the number of cases in Serbia is very limited. I think it was only around 200 people had died and only 100,000 cases when they began the tour. But it just doesn't make sense looking back on it. And indeed, people said at the time that they were being very careless. But I do also think that there's been too much focus on either trying to absolve Djokovic of any blame or blame him entirely. I think realistically, we should be looking at trying to spread the blame around, apportion it to everyone who was involved, because everyone really is equally responsible.
Yeah, there does seem to have been quite a big focus on Djokovic himself. I know I kind of led into that with that, but I think you make a good point there. Glenys, you saw what was happening there kind of from afar. I know we're both from the UK. So do you think, I mean, we never thought about even attempted something like that with Battle of the Brits. Do you think it was kind of foolish for them to, was it always doomed to failure for them to do this?
When I first heard about the tour, it sounded like a great idea. Yeah. Then I saw it on TV. I'd seen the, you know, where they're welcoming. There was no social distancing at all. The players were just like nothing had happened. They were shaking hands. They were hugging each other when they arrived. They were going to discos and nightclubs. It seemed to as though they were just ignoring the pandemic. Yes, the tennis itself was great. But again, in hindsight, I think they should have run it differently. With, like, as you say, the Battle of the Brits, there was no fans, everybody was tested every day. That, as far as I'm aware, there was no testing done at Adria at all, which seemed crazy at the time. And the number of fans that were there, that shouldn't have been allowed. I believe they said originally there was only going to be about 1,000 people or something there, but there was way more than that.
And yeah, and people gathering outside stadiums and, like I say, socialising together and things like that, you can probably add on a few more thousand to the thousand that said we're going to be there. I was like you, though, when I first heard the announcement and I followed it on Twitter and found out all the players that were going to be playing there, it sounded like a really exciting way to kind of bring back tennis into the mainstream. And as a tennis fan, that was great, but you know, in retrospect, everything's easy in retrospect, I guess. But Jack, how has this kind of been reported stateside? There was reports that Dimitrov might have contracted the virus, I think from Miami, maybe. So even the US seems to have been dragged into this Adria Tour mess as well.
I mean, it's certainly possible he could have. Obviously, the United States has been, you know, to put it mildly, having challenges consistently being responsible about the pandemic, certainly from a government standpoint. And then from state to state, obviously government response has varied, and also the response of the citizenry has varied. Florida has been a hotspot for the virus in the US almost throughout the pandemic. We just reached on July 1st a new high for new cases in the US. So yesterday there were, I think, almost a little over 52,000 cases, which is more than there have been at any other point. So it's certainly possible that he contracted the virus here, but I think most of the coverage has focused on explaining to people what the Adria Tour is in US sports media, just because it didn't get as much attention initially as it did in tennis specific media or like in sports media generally in other parts of the world, just because it wasn't happening here and there's so many other things going on. But a lot of the focus has been on Djokovic, and I think it's correct that the blame is a little bit diffuse here, but when you have one of the motivating influences behind the event and its primary organizer is somebody who clearly does not, or at least at the time, was not taking the pandemic seriously and has a demonstrated history of being a little bit iffy on science, I think it's okay for him to be apportioned a little bit more of the blame. Obviously, all the players still had to go, all the fans still had to turn up, but the event never had to happen in the form that it took. And that, I think, is down to the organizers.
It's like, I think it comes back to what Jim kind of started with. It's the PR nightmare for Djokovic. And it's not been helped by certain members of his family, members of his team. And he always seems to have had this, Jim, that sometimes things stick to him a little bit more than they maybe do to Federer, Nadal, even Andy Murray as well.
I think that's partly an issue with the fact that his PR has never been as good as, certainly, I mean, Federer has an excellent PR team. You pretty much never see him make a misstep on the PR front. I think Djokovic is a bit more slightly homespun. He certainly lets his father speak to the press far more than is wise, considering Sjerdan's propensity to go off on one, as we would say in this country. He occupies a difficult place in the tennis world, in that he has been cast pretty much as the villain since he arrived, and that's a role that he is clearly uncomfortable playing. He doesn't want to be the villain. Why would you? His position and his relationship with the media in particular, there's always been a real discomfort there, kind of on both fronts, both the media and him. But he particularly doesn't deal with the media that well. And as Jack says, he comes up with some strange ideas that don't help him.
I mean, that's the thing, because like, it's partially PR, but also like, Federer and Nadal are not out here giving platforms to like new age gurus with weird ideas about what you can do to water with your feelings. Like he's an odd guy in some respects, and he doesn't seem to measure that against the platform that he has, or he uses his platform for his strange ideas, which is, you know, in this instance ended up being not just bad PR, but a threat to public health in his home country. And then he didn't seem to take his own sort of, you know, testing after the fact and travel particularly seriously either. And we don't know how he's doing, really. There's not been a lot of proactive, updating. Not that he has to let us into his private life, but this is the head of the ATP Players Council. We should know if he's like able to be active in that role right now when it's such an important time in tennis and in the world.
Yeah, so obviously he's that prominent figure in tennis. And personally, I don't have it's very difficult to draw the line, isn't it, about what people should and shouldn't be saying in a public forum. And no one wants to kind of censor other people. That's not the way that we work. But he certainly maybe could think a lot more about what he does put out there. But that taking that Players' Council position, I want a yes or no answer from each of you guys, starting with Glenys, I think. Should Novak Djokovic step down from the Players' Council?
Yes.
Jack?
Absolutely.
Jim?
I think it's a decision for the Players' Council. If they don't want him to be their president, then yes. And if they do, then no.
Okay. Right, then, let's move on to the good news that the tennis is going to be coming back. I'm sure there will be some social distancing measures put into place following what we've just talked about. But I believe it's the WTA Tour that are leading the way here. They have a scheduled tournament on the 3rd of August in Palermo, the Ladies Open, and then they go to Prague the following week. And then it's to this New York Festival of Tennis that they seem to have come up out of almost nowhere. The Western Southern Open has been moved to New York from Cincinnati, its usual home. And that's the 10 days before the US Open scheduled to run, which obviously is 2 weeks. And then there's a little bit of a mini clay court season. We'll get the guys' feelings on that. And then Paris. And then we'll go to Paris for Roland Garros. And then we continue the season on into November. And the Players' Tours finals on both tours are scheduled for towards the end of the year. I'm not sure if the ATP have actually confirmed that with theirs or not. They've got a schedule up to Paris, I know for certain, but I'm not sure what happens after that. Maybe the guys have had more information on that one. Jack, let's go to this idea of playing so much tennis in New York. Is that something that's exciting, worrying? How is that being played out over there?
Well, again, with the United States, it's a little bit of a balancing act. So obviously they're willing to move the Western and Southern Open to New York. So you could say, well, why not maybe hold the U.S. Open in Cincinnati, where there are fewer people, a less dense setting, certainly not a place that had such an intense outbreak of the virus. But I was actually just in New York yesterday because I was moving out of my apartment there. And because the virus was so serious, the citizenry of New York, like, you walk down the street and everyone there is wearing masks. Almost everyone is wearing masks, but it's a much higher proportion than I've seen in other places. There's a lot of social distancing being practiced. So it is a location that is also more sort of virus conscious in that way. My concerns, I think, would be pretty much the same wherever this was being held, which is that it is hundreds of players from around the world converging on one location. And at least on the men's side, we have not seen players taking this particularly seriously. And all it takes is one or two players going around, ignoring social distancing, to possibly bring the virus not only into the event itself, possibly, you know, causing it to shut down, but also possibly being a locus for spreading it further. So my main concerns are less location-based and more about the fact that there have not yet been clear guidelines from U.S. tennis or from either of the tours about what consequences for ignoring whatever measures are put in place to protect the player's safety and the public safety for these events to happen. There need to be clear guidelines and there need to be clear consequences. We've already seen Alexander Zverev going out post Adria tour after he said he's going to, you know, self-isolate and stay in place for 14 days and he's out partying on the Riviera. So there's not been, as I say, at least on the men's side, the demonstration to me that this is something that they're all taking really, really seriously.
I couldn't believe that. That was an interesting discovery when that all came out. Beggars belief, really. Glenys, is there anything in the WTA tour that you kind of question? The fact that they're coming back so seemingly relatively soon, even ahead of what the men have planned? And is there anything there that you're looking forward to as well?
With the WTA, I mean, we don't seem to have yet much information on how this is going to run. There's no information out there that I've been able to gather on this. But what I'm hoping that they've done is they saw how the Battle of the Brits ran, although that was indoors. You know, there was no fans. That was very low risk. I think if they take all the precautions on board, do it behind closed doors, that's the major thing. No fans. I think that's going to be, at the moment, the only way that forward for this until we can get a handle on how to get fans back into the stadiums safely.
So would you say you're still quite pensive about the return of tennis, as much as you're looking forward to it as a tennis lover?
Yeah, kind of, because it's going to be good to see it, but it'll have to be on TV only. And yeah, if you can do it well, do it with the right precautions, then yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. But I don't have any of the details. Even really, the US Open haven't put out too many bits of information. They say it's going to be behind closed doors, or they did. But are they trying to change that? Some of the players are still dubious about even going there at the moment. So it's still all up in the air, but it is good to have tennis trying to make its way back in.
Yeah, it's constantly changing pandemic. That's the issue that everyone's facing. And I think tennis has got that maybe a little bit worse than something like soccer, which is at least mostly within its own countries. It's all played kind of domestically, whereas tennis has this worldwide issue. Jim, looking back, you know, it seems ages ago since the French Open said, right, we're moving unilaterally here and we want to move the Roland Garros tournament to this date in September, which I remember caused a massive consternation at the time and a bit of criticism from elsewhere. But that's starting to look a little bit like a fantastic move, is it not, for the French?
I don't know if I would describe it as a fantastic move. It's certainly something that they did. And I think almost the less said about their decision to do that, the better. They've burned a lot of bridges by doing it. You know, there was fans were confused, but people, you know, the people that run tennis behind the scenes were, as I understand it, furious that they unilaterally decided to do it. I'm not sure how, I mean, I've not spent much time in Paris in late September, but I've spent plenty of time just across the channel, and I wouldn't fancy playing tennis in late September, early October in England, especially with the amount it's going to rain. They only have one roof. So I don't know how they're planning to play, just practically, they're planning to play an outdoor clay court tournament. It's only a week after, or a couple of weeks after the US Open. So they're not going to have, yeah, so 14 days after the US Open final, they're planning to start another Grand Slam. I'm not sure how that's going to work. I thought at the time it was a terrible idea, and I'm afraid I haven't seen anything to change my mind. I think, you know, Wimbledon, their hand was forced by the difficulty in maintaining a grass court, so they were forced to cancel the Wimbledon. But I think the French Open, I think Roland Garros ultimately should have made the same decision, that it wasn't possible realistically to play the French Open, so this year they weren't going to play the French Open.
It's incredible that they announced that as they did, and just, yeah, like I say, without seemingly any corroboration with anybody at all. I only label it as a fantastic move because it looks like they're going to get what they want, which is a tournament of the size of Roland Garros still taking part in this year and minimising the losses that I'm sure they were dreading having. So, you know, if you're part of the French Tennis Federation, then you're kind of getting your way, which probably isn't the best for the rest of us, I don't think. So it seems like the US Open, we don't really know that much about it. I was going to discuss about how we read that current situation, but I think that kind of folded into the discussion that we've already had. So we'll just talk about then some players who we think may have used this break to come back stronger and who might actually benefit from what has happened in terms of maybe getting fitter, maybe forgetting about previous things that have happened on tour and using this as a fresh start. And Glenys, I'm going to come to you first, if that's all right. Who do you think might have... you know, just looking perceptively around, who do you think might come back strong?
Straight off the bat, or following on from the Battle of Britain, Battle of the Brits thing, Dan Evans, because he was practically unstoppable last week.
Those people who didn't follow the Battle of the Brits, Evans beat Kyle Edmund in the final in straight sets. So, yeah, continue.
Yeah. I'm quite hopeful from what I saw of Andy Murray as well coming back, because he's been out way too long, and the break, to be honest, I think the break came at the right time for him. He said that he's been able to do practicing and getting fitter on with his hip. His tennis is getting there. It wasn't quite perfect. Doubles definitely would be, I see the Jamie and Neil. Jamie Murray and Neil Skopiński, they're doing really well as a pairing. So I see that they were going to come back. Outside of the Brits, it's a little difficult because I'm not seeing much what's going on, because we don't get anything on the TV. Like we had the Adria Tour, but then I was watching some of that and I thought Grigor was doing quite well. And then obviously he's now tested positive for coronavirus. So how's that going to affect him going forward? Because it can stay in his system for quite a while and you can take a long time to recover from it, depending on how badly you get it. So it's a little difficult, really, from outside of the Brit side of things. But I'm looking forward to getting it back on and seeing how the Brits do.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you say, in terms of being from the UK, that was televised and you can only really go off what you see, really. I've seen a little bit of Dominic Thiem in lockdown. He's obviously, as Dominic Thiem wants to do, seems to want to play all the time and everywhere. So he's coming for a little bit of criticism, I think, for travelling to and from different countries and getting some practice in. But the fact that he's playing quite a lot means he'll probably be ready to hit the ground running as well. Jim, have you seen much tennis over the lockdown period? And is there anyone that you've seen that may, or that you just think might come back and hit the ground running?
Well, I was going to mention Dominic Thiem, but you've sort of stolen that. But in all seriousness, I think he was in such a good place before the lockdown started. He's been making great progress over the last few years, especially last year on hard courts. really moving away from that idea of him being a clay court specialist to really an all surface player now, or at least both on hard courts and clay courts. So I thought he was someone that was really ready to push on and win a Grand Slam. And I think the lockdown has not helped him, but he's been playing so much tennis. He seems to have appeared in every exhibition event. I'm not even entirely convinced that he hasn't been playing in the WTA ones, maybe wearing a wig or some other form of disguise. He's been playing so much tennis. So he should be sharp as anyone when we come back. And the US Open surface really seems to suit his game. So he could be really in good shape to win his first Grand Slam.
Yeah, which might not be a shock because of, like I say, the fact that he's improved so much and he's kind of moving in that direction. Jack, are you of the opinion that shocks are going to be more likely to happen or less likely as a result of the lockdown period?
I think they're probably more likely just because there's a whole new factor at play. And there are incredible players like Nadal who are very open about how much they feel like they need matches to be in shape. I think team hasn't necessarily articulated that, but as you both pointed out, he wants to play all the time. He's been playing all the time. I think we'll probably see a few surprising results. There could be some younger players who were already about to break through before this, and this has given them a chance to focus on their fitness, fill out their frame a little bit, really focus on making that transition step. There's players who've already started breaking through, like Rublev, who could possibly go deeper than they have before. And even if that's just sort of the trajectory they were already on, it'll feel like a surprise because it comes after this break. There's also, on the women's side, there's players like Coco Gauff, who is already so good, but to have had, you know, 6 or 8 more months to really just focus on crafting her game at an early age, who knows what she'll come back doing. I think there's a lot of possibility for upsets. And there's a couple of the consistent players in these draws who take out a lot of guys, and on the women's side as well, who may not play. Like Halep is probably unlikely to play the US Open. She skipped the Rio Olympics because of Zika. I don't imagine she would take the risk to travel and play in it. And you've got basically Federer and Djokovic are both out. And Nadal is a question mark because he's so sort of, you know, careful in particular, it's unclear whether he'll play. So without the three of them there to remove a lot of players early in the draw, the sort of dangerous floater has become a little bit less of a factor at times, especially in men's tennis, because you have such consistency at the very top of the game that those guys might be dangerous, but they still get taken out at some point. Whereas here, one of them could actually make it pretty far. Somebody like Monfils, who, you know, ran up against Djokovic in the semifinals of the US Open, but maybe if Djokovic isn't there, he can make his way past somebody. You know, it's an interesting time.
Certainly is an interesting time. It's going to be probably wide open. I'm slightly of the opinion. I thought that I was going to be of the opinion there would be more shocks, but having watched the Battle of the Brits, I know it's come up again, but the cream really rose to the top there. And I wonder whether that might still be the case, whether just the ultimately talented tennis players will still be the ones that are up there at the top and winning the titles. And another point you just made about Coco Gauff there, I wonder whether those really young players who are desperate for experience and can only really, sometimes think you can only really be at the top of the game if you've got that experience, are now going to be still lacking that, having not had tennis for, you know, 4 or 5 months, and whether that's going to actually impinge their development and maybe they need a little bit more time even still to reach the top. But that's just an opinion. We'll find out hopefully pretty soon. Just a quick question before we go into the quiz answers. I just want you to nail down something that does excite you about the return of tennis. Glenys, I'll come to you first.
Being able to watch it. I've missed it. There's been nothing for me to, I don't really do a lot of other sports, but give me tennis and I'll watch it. You know, at the moment I'm having to make do with the old Wimbledons that the BBC are rerunning because I'm just missing it that much. So that's what I'm looking forward to. Also seeing some of the youngsters, as you mentioned there, because see how they're doing, see how they're progressing.
Absolutely. Get it back on the TV. What Chris is saying there. Jim, what one thing are you looking forward to the return of tennis?
Oh, definitely court surfing. So just first week of a Grand Slam or a big tournament. Never mind what's going on in the main courts. I just want to look around for, you know, find as many fifth set encounters between the world number 125 and the world number 47. Just those strange matches that turn into be sort of weird instant classics that you just only get really early on in a big tournament.
I feel you, man. I absolutely feel you with that. Jack?
Well, not to be a downer, because I absolutely agree with both Glennis and Jim, because I'm not big in a lot of other sports, so tennis back is going to be fantastic, and I love those, you know, deep run matches early in tournaments, or the you know, instant classic matches that happen on court 12. But I'm excited for tennis to have another chance to show that it can be responsible. Because the Adria Tour got a lot of coverage outside of the world of tennis, and it would be great. And I'm excited at the possibility that these upcoming tournaments are going to take all of the, you know, social distancing and other safety requirements really seriously and show that it can be done right, similar to what Battle of the Brits did, which I think there's a reason it's come up so many times on this podcast. And it's not just because you guys are mostly UK based, but because it really was a great competition, really engaging matches, and it was really responsible as well.
Absolutely, and it'd be good to show that a multifaceted sport such as tennis, where you've got men, women from all over the world, literally a global sport, which I don't think any other sport really matches tennis for its global kind of reach and accessibility across the globe. So if we can get it back and in a responsible way, then that would be a great message to send out, I think. Hear, hear for that. Right, quiz. We're looking for players that have won the consecutive US Open titles since 1980. We're going to go quick fire here. We're going to go in the order of Glennis, Jim, Jack, and then we'll keep going around until people start getting them wrong. So, Glennis, if you can give it, remember, it's men and women, so just fire away.
Serena Williams.
Serena is correct. Jim?
Pat Rafter.
Correct, yeah. I thought that one would go later. Yeah, he did. Jack?
Martina Navratilova.
What? Glennis?
McEnroe
is correct. Jim?
Steffi Graf?
Correct. Jack?
Monica Seles?
Correct. Glennis?
Oh, dear. I'm going to come up a bit more up to date now. Medvedev?
Yes. I think he did it six times in a row. Jim?
Goodness. Pete Sampras?
Yes. Doing well, guys. Really well. Jack?
Kim Clijsters.
Correct. Yes. We've got four left now, so it's getting tight. Glennis?
Thanks. Consecutive back-to-backs. Don't
know,
Rafa?
No,
he's never
Rafa.
Done it.
No, Rafa. Go on, Jim.
I know it hasn't. Roger Federer was the last man to do it. No one's won back-to-back since 2008. On the men's side. I don't think Agassi ever did it. God, it's a real struggle now.
Yeah.
I would say Agassi, because maybe.
Not Agassi. So you've got three men left and one woman. I didn't think so. Jack, you're the only person left standing with an unblemished record. Do you want to have a go?
Oof. Lendl.
Lendl's correct. Do you want to keep going? See if you can get... There's two men and one woman left.
Jimmy Connors?
Yeah. Two to go.
Oh, boy. Another man. Stefan Edberg?
Yes.
Oh, excellent.
You could go for the
and there's another woman.
We've had Serena, Kim Clijsters, Steffi Graf, Monica Seles, and Martina Navratilova. So you're looking for someone.
Not Venus Williams? Did she ever do it?
It is Venus Williams, yeah. So there's your 13. Jack, you finished with an unbeaten record there.
First time ever in the quiz. I did not disgrace myself.
It was not Thomas Johansson there to trip you up.
See, this is why we got to stick. Oh, Thomas is in the bad books forever.
Yeah. I hope you guys did well at home there. If you got all 13, then please let us know. I always say you can have a job, but Jim's on the podcast and he's an assistant editor, so I don't think I'm allowed to say that. Right. Thank you to Glenys. I know you've taken your time out of your busy working day to join us. You can head off now, but thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you to Jack coming in after. What, so you've moved into a house, have you now, Jack?
Yeah, temporarily, for at least the next few months, getting out of the city and
staying. Is this coronavirus related, or is it just a lifestyle move? Or
A little bit of both.
Okay, and Jim, thank you for joining us as well with your non-webcam laptop.
No worries.
Got your microphone working as well, which is pleasing to see. Right, thank you to everybody. Hope you enjoyed that at home. We'll be back with you again very soon. We've got another podcast lined up, so hopefully we'll see you all then.
We'll ride off into the night. The air is clear, the time is right. Feels so high coming down. Clouds are foaming all around. Take your time, fill it up. Drinking gin from a paper cup. We've got all of our lives to find out what we like. Running across.